It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 527 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I talk with the creators of Dead Dreams, The Lucid Chronicles No. 1, Brittany Matter and Dalen Ogden. Their crowdfunding for this project is on zoop.gg. Brittany's probably best known for Off Into the Sunset, while Dalen's art has graced Whiff Wolf, among other projects. Dead Dreams is described this way. In the vein of Orphan Black and Fringe, Dead Dreams, The Lucid Chronicles No. 1 is a 32-page sci-fi thriller where parallel worlds exist, dreams are drugs, and doppelgangers dare to change the world. This fundraiser will conclude on Tuesday, March 29, but I highly recommend you don't wait till then, but get out there and support it as soon as you listen to this interview. There's a lot to get through in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast the creators of Dead Dreams, The Lucid Chronicles, number one, which is on zoop.gg. Let's see, the writer is Brittany Matter. How are you, Brittany?
I'm good, thank you.
And the artist is Dalen Ogden. How you doing, Dalen?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
It's good to talk with you. Oh, yeah, thank you. It's good to talk with you guys because this is the first time, and I've done over 525 episodes, that I've actually talked to two woman creators at the same time. So this is very special for me. I love that. And it's wonderful stuff. And I think that's a sign of the future of comics, to be honest with you. So great, great, great stuff. So let's start off talking about Dead Dreams, The Lucid Chronicles. Let me read a little bit of the description from Zoop.gg. It says, it's a 32-page sci-fi thriller where parallel worlds exist, dreams are drugs, and doppelgangers dare to change the world. So, Brittany, how would you like to add something to that?
Oh, sure. It follows Pena Axeltree, who's an aspiring actress looking to live out her dreams. But when she does so, she takes a tonic and ends up in a parallel world. And it's a more ruthless world than she's used to. So she has to make a choice, either run or become a different version of herself.
It's really interesting because we get to see not only her, but we see some other characters get involved in dreams and stuff like that. Before we get too deep into it, I would like to know, Brittany, why you called it Dead Dreams, because that's an interesting phrase, you know, because there's a guy that refers to that pretty quickly in the book. But I'm just kind of curious as to why you chose to call it that.
Oh, yeah. So the comic does answer that question, but I think the overall idea of Dead Dreams was about dreams not pursued. Mm-hmm. So when I thought of this whole concept, I was thinking about the dreams that I didn't follow through with and how they kind of, you know, cease to exist. So that's where that stems from.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause we've all had roads not taken in our lives and stuff like that. And I always look back and I think, what if I had said yes instead of no?
Yeah.
At that time. And that's a whole different world if that's the case.
Right. And I think that's where regret can come from.
Boy, is that true. Very, very, very true. Now, Dalen, as far as the art goes, I really like the art. Did you have a style in mind that you thought fit the story real well that you used?
So in this case, actually, huge credit and big ups goes to Harry Connor, who was the artist on this book when it was still just a little baby pitch before it ever became a full-fledged comic. They had done like the first six pages before I even signed on to the project. And so they set me out like this really beautiful framework to work from. I really feel like what I ended up doing was not so much building things from scratch, maybe the way that I would have done it, but instead I got to sort of like add my voice to this really cool chorus of fascinating ideas that I just absolutely loved. Like I could have built it up from the ground up, but I really didn't want any of Harry's work to go to waste because it's just phenomenal.
So did you were inspired by his work? Is that what happened?
So they did the first, 6 pages, totally finished out, and I actually recreated them in my style. And then from there, looking at their pages and their character designs, I planned out and illustrated the rest of the book. So what I ended up doing was really looking at like their design sensibilities and using that as a jumping off point to add my own voice to it.
You were going to say something, Brittany?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like how, you know, Marvel and DC creators will pick up, you know, Marvel and DC's IP and their characters as a jumping off point and do them in their style.
Cool.
Yeah. We're kind of crediting Harry as like the layout artist because they really did lay some of the initial framework in such a beautiful way that we wanted to make sure it didn't go to waste.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But well, the final work in the book, it's all my stuff on the page, you know.
Well, it looks beautiful. I really liked it. And I always judge artwork by two things. I judge it by facial expressions and by action sequences. And both of those, I think, really are strong in here. That it's a little simpler style as far as facial expression goes. But I never question ever what the person is feeling. And I think that's a great accomplishment.
Well, thank you.
It's just terrific. While I'm talking to you, let me just ask, I always like to ask this question. Did the characters come from people you know, their appearance? Did you create them out of your imagination? How did you come up with what the characters looked like?
It's usually out of imagination. I definitely never base it off of people I know because A, I don't ever feel like I'm quite that good at likeness, and B, I would hate to base a character off of someone I know and then have them discover it and like be weird about it. So for the most part, my strategy is a lot of times to either go through kind of like stock photos of people, just kind of like random, or to 3D sculpt a rough face of what I want them to look like. But either way, cool. It's kind of a very intuitive process. I just, once I land on a character's face that makes sense to me, I just know it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
How do
and
you,
from there if, I can build out.
If you don't mind me asking, how do you 3D sculpt them?
So there's like, a lot of different kind of programs you can do it in. There's Blender and those likes. I actually really like this program called FaceGen that starts you out with like a really sort of basic, like milquetoast run of the mill face. And then you can sit there and like mess with all of the facial features, make the nose longer, shorter, make the eyebrows thicker, thinner, up, down, you know, you're changing the shape of the cheekbones, the brow ridge, the lips, whether they're pointing up or down, all that stuff. It's like, it's very, very thorough. And so from there, I tend to just play around with things until I have a character space that I feel like makes sense for the character.
And then you draw it from there?
Yeah, yeah. Then I use that as a reference.
Cool. Very interesting. I think you did a great job with them. They're very realistic to me.
Thank you.
Which I like. And of course, the thing in this book that people realize pretty quickly is that there are multiple versions of the same character going around. And that must have been a little bit of a challenge too. I'm going to get back to you, Brittany, and talk more about the story in just a minute. But I'm hooked into the art for a couple of minutes.
That's fine.
So as far as like Pina, for example, she is there's one version of her which we see at the beginning, and then there's another version of her which I think is called the Matron. Yes. Was it difficult to do that? You talked about constructing the moon face. Did you have to do it twice in order to get the two different looks?
No. So every doppelganger shares the same face model. So the same reference place that I'm coming from. The big sort of trick to really differentiating the characters from their doppelgangers is it's really all about like fashion choices. It's all about posture. It's all about acting, especially. So these different doppelgangers, you know, like they're the same people, but they're also extremely not the same people. And it becomes much easier to tell them apart when you understand the way that their mannerisms are different and the way that their backstories have shaped them into different iterations of kind of the same basic personality, sometimes to like very, very intense effect.
Interesting. Did it take a long time to do that? Or once you had the original one, was it easy to do the doppelganger?
You know, it's it varies from character to character. But I think for the most part, it was pretty easy to do the doppelganger because a lot of times you're seeing different aspects of their personalities that you can, you know, kind of bring to the forefront. So at that point, it becomes less about trying to think of it as an entirely separate character and more about trying to think of it as like a separate personality in the same character, if that makes sense.
Because if you read the book, you know, almost right away, we get to see Pina, like, as I mentioned, and the other version of her, I like to call it. It's really kind of interesting to see. And now on the zoop.gg page, there's a thing for the cast, it says, and we get to see the two different versions of the same characters. Did you draw those?
I did. Yes.
Okay. So that'll help with all those kids. I find that the artwork in the book was really, as I was saying, was a little simpler in some of those drawings. Did that have to do with, like, if you were doing something far away, you did a simpler version as opposed to a lot of detail?
Yeah, pretty much. Comic books is one of those mediums that is really all about balancing detail with your deadlines, basically.
leaving space for lettering.
Yeah, definitely leaving space for lettering. And also it's just like it's not feasible as a comic book artist to make every single drawing like the best you possibly can. Because it takes a really long time and comic books need to get made on a tighter schedule than that. And it's like, I think a really great example of this is actually like Fiona Staples's work from Saga. Mm-hmm. If you compare her interior work with her cover work, you can see that like it's a lot more mark making in her cover work. You know, she spends a lot more time like rendering those things out and really like making them as finished and as beautiful and as cover worthy as possible. And then when you look at her interior stuff, it's a little bit looser. It's still like very clearly her work. But I think this is true of most comic book artists, that we all sort of have like an interior style versus an exterior style.
Well, covers require a little more from you because you're trying to get the person's attention as they're walking by.
Absolutely.
You got to get them I always tell the cover sells the stuff, but the inside art pulls you in and keeps you going through the story.
Yeah. But basically all I'm getting at is just that like there is a difference between my interior work and my more illustrative stuff. So the covers as well as like the character bust art, for example.
Cool. Very cool. Well, you can tell it's very well done. I really, really enjoy it. I think it's great. Now, story. There's an illustration right at the very beginning, we see this booth, and it looks like it's at like a mall or a fair or something like that. If anybody has ever sold comics for a living, they know what these booths are like. it's what's really interesting, what grabbed my attention right away, was there's a little poster to the right of the booth, and it says Dead Dreams is not responsible for loss of income, limbs, or death while dreaming, For recreational use only, please dream responsibly.
Yeah, that's a nice in-world, you know, ad or warning.
Mm-hmm. Which I really liked. There's the pivot that comes in, like, as I mentioned, as we talked about before. As we start, when the whole thing starts out, there's a guy who is running the booth, shall we say, and he is not necessarily completely happy to be there. And if any of us have ever done booths where we're not necessarily married to the product we're selling, it gets a little tough to remain enthusiastic about it. I've sat at booths where I didn't quite understand all the stuff. I had to sit in for a person for an hour, and people would come up and ask me questions, and I go, can you wait an hour until the guy comes back who did this? So he seems to be a little bit like that. And it's such an interesting story. And then you make that wonderful little pivot about, a quarter or a third of the way through, where there's a significant change in what's going on, which I really like, because I'm always interested, because, you know, usually a comic starts out with a certain setting and it stays that way for the whole comic. You don't do that, which I thought was really creative, really interesting. Was that your plan, to do that all along, to kind of make a shift like that pretty quick?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that was always in the script. And I think the booth vendor that you're talking about, that's Ave, and they're non-binary. Mm-hmm. So their pronouns are they, them. And that warning that you read, I had to actually look back because I couldn't really remember, but I believe Harry wrote that into the original pitch pages, which was based off of like all the dream tonic and drug like content that I shared with them. Mm-hmm. So they really like took what I had given them initially and like expanded upon it. And then Dalen kept it, which was wonderful. Thank you,
Dalen. Yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, Harry's work was so phenomenal that I really didn't want any of it to go to waste.
That's really great. Now, like I said, that really got my attention, and I was looking at it going like, that is so interesting. And the interesting thing is he's sitting there trying to sell stuff, and it doesn't necessarily go well.
Yeah, it's not easy selling your wares.
Mm-hmm. As we have all done. Have you ever been at a convention and tried to sell things?
Not me.
Okay, how about you, Dan?
Actually, I have, but not for comics.
Okay, because if you've ever done that, let me tell you, people come up to you and you do put your best face on and try to sell it, and you're always discouraged when they just kind of turn around and walk away from you. That's what happens sometimes.
Yeah, so. I'm actually an Artist Alley veteran over here. I've done so many Comic Cons at this point. You get used to it. There's there's something out there for everyone, and conversely, your work is not for everyone. So you do get used to it, but definitely, I know the feeling of having somebody walk up and strike up a conversation with you, and then eventually walk away without buying something. And it's, you get the sense that like, they were just talking to me because they felt like they had to, not really because they wanted to.
There's a wonderful line that the guy at the booth says, and the woman comes up and says that she's there for a reason. And she took a prophetic dream potion. And his response is, because now he's a little jaded, and he goes, "So it told you to come back and not buy anything."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely bitter.
I love that. Well, after a while, you know, and you come to expect it's not going to be a sale. And you can't approach like that because, of course, her response is really interesting and very different, which I really liked. Very surprising and how that happened. So I like that little twist right there. It was a thing. And once that twist happens, everything goes a little differently from that point on. And that's where we meet other characters, as the person in charge of the booth talks with somebody who apparently has something to do with the business. And then we get into we go back, we follow the main character, the girl, along, and we get to see what things could be like for her if she follows her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Which I have to say, I was really gripped by that. Because one of the things I really enjoyed was when it was a dream, the coloring changed, which I really liked. Was that intentional? I mean, was that something you, Brittany, or Dalen came up with? How did you decide what to do as far as the color goes? Did you have a colorist that did that?
I'm the colorist on the book as well. So all of that is my stuff. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brittany. I don't really remember us talking about it explicitly. I have a certain sense of how I imagine things to look when they're sort of magical or supernatural, otherworldly in this case, since I don't know if magic is exactly the right word to use for it. I really just sort of followed my instincts on that.
It's really well done. I love the way that it looks noticeably different in there. And there's something I got to ask Brittany, though, because the main character has, let's just say, something. She ends up getting a little injured, which I thought was interesting. And do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because that clearly tells us there's something going on with the main character. Can you talk a little bit about that without spoiling too much?
Yeah, I can tell you that she feels what she experiences. She feels the wound,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if that's ever happened to you in your dreams where you, you know, dreamt that you're injured or mm-hmm. I once fell out of bed during a dream. And so that sort of became real to me. And I think that's where that kind of stems from. And it shows kind of that her experience may be more real than she realizes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember one time when I woke up falling out of bed, I saw the bed going by.
Oh.
And then I hit the ground and I said, okay, I just fell out of bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not fun.
Mm-mm, not at all. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this book is that there are horror elements to it, Brittany. And I don't want to spoil it, but we get to the end. Something happens involving a child that kind of startled me a little bit. And I was like, whoa. And is this more, you consider this book more of a something for, it's not for younger readers, this is more for adults?
I would say it's for young adults and older adults. I think that kids can handle a lot. Mm-hmm. And by kids, I mean, 14 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And it is meant to shock and be horrible in that sense. But there's a reason for that,
mm-hmm.
which, will come in later issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as, now we're recording this a little early and I get so involved in the subject. I forget to do this. People get on me all the time about this. This is, right now the Zoop is going to conclude on the 29th, which is a Tuesday of March. We're recording this a little early, so right now is where they are. You're a third of the way there, and hopefully by the time this posts, you are right into the stretch goals which you have listed on there. And your goal is $3,500, which is a very modest way to do it. So I think it's a very attainable goal, and I'm looking forward to it. As we're talking, you're already over 50 supporters. So I'm very confident that moving forward, we're going to have you're going to get a successful Zoop project out of this, and hopefully move forward. Now, this is 32 pages, and you were telling me before we started recording that this is actually going to end up, if all goes well, going to be a 5-issue series.
I hope so. It really depends on how this first issue plays out on Zoop. So we'll see.
All right. Is this your first crowdfunding event?
Not for me. No, I've helped other creators with their comics and Kickstarters. I also
not
ran
for me
one.
Either.
Yeah, Dalen's old hat.
Not the oldest hat, but I have done it before.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. I mean, see, crowdfunding these days is such a wonderful thing. It helps make books, but, you know, if you couldn't go to the big three, for example, and get picked up, used to be that was the end of the project. But now with crowdfunding, and Zoop, I think, is doing a great job, and they're picking up a lot of steam as things go along. It's making it possible for creators like you guys to be able to do that and to make things happen. Is this, though, your first time kind of running a crowdfunding thing, Brittany?
It's not. This would be my, I guess, my third.
Wow.
The first one was a GoFundMe, and the second was a Kickstarter that I launched in March 2020. It was for an anthology, and it was a really big goal, and it didn't hit the mark, but I learned a lot from it.
See, that's what people always tell me. They may not get the goal, but the knowledge they gain is so worth it for them. It's really good stuff. Now, of course, why Zoop? What was it about Zoop.gg that appealed to you for this project?
For me, they offered to handle fulfillment and shipping, which was, you know, not heard of at other crowdfunding platforms. So that was really appealing to me to have some help.
Mm-hmm.
And they're comics focused, which is different. And that was exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the add-ons that you have kind of intrigued me. You've got a double-sided bookmark, which you can buy for $3. Dalen, is that your art? Did you change the art from side to side?
Yeah, that's actually just an adaptation of the cover illustration.
Okay.
So not a whole lot done to it, but I made sure to, you know, scale it down properly, make sure it looks nice, and overlay some of the interesting, beautiful graphics that Sasha designed as well. Sasha Head, the designer on the book.
Cool.
It's fun because obviously since it's double-sided, you can flip back and forth between Pina and the matron.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing that's offered, and Brittany, this is something you're doing, for $150, you get an editorial consultation. Writer and editor Brittany Matter will edit your pitch synopsis, limit one page, plus offer overall feedback on your short comic, limit 10-page comic script.
Yes, indeed.
Do you have experience doing that with people?
Yes, I do. I've been editing comics for independent authors since 2011. So,
wow. Are you a grammar Nazi like I am?
You know, I would say no. I'm not super strict. I think that, you know, language evolves a lot, and there's a lot of flexibility in it. And I always ask a lot of questions in my editing feedback to avoid being strict about grammar. I think the only times that it really comes up, you know, like grammar issues, if something's like unclear.
See, I'm big on commas.
Oh yeah, I do love the Oxford comma.
There's a saying I always like to say. There's a big difference between let's eat, comma, grandpa, and let's eat grandpa.
That's true.
My roommate got me a T-shirt that says, you know, grammar saves lives, and I got a kick out of that because that's kind of the way that I do it. And I always get a kick when people are surprised to hear that. I never thought of that. And I go like, well, yeah. My biggest thing and my biggest worry is when I don't know if you share this with me, but I'm always worried that if you provide enough roadblocks, someone's going to stop reading the book. And I'm always trying desperately to get rid of those roadblocks. And so if I have to sit there and figure out what they're trying to say, if I hit that too many times, I will tend to, well, okay, that's enough. But a lot of people will tend to, I mean, I read commas and I don't know what they're talking about, to be honest with you. I'll ask the editor or ask the person, the writer, what did you mean to say there? What was that all about? And sometimes they're providing directions to the artist and all this kind of stuff. But I'm always trying to make sure that this is as smooth a process for the reader as possible. Because if like I said, anybody that makes it too hard is going to lose people. And I don't want that. Mm-hmm. How about you? Is that how you approach it?
Yeah, when things are unclear or confusing, that's definitely when my editor, the editor side of me, kicks into full gear. And then I, like I said, ask a lot of questions like, did you mean that? Or did you mean something else? And then it's kind of a conversation.
It's kind of the same thing when it comes to art. You want to make sure that your art is as easily understood as possible. So do you ever run into that kind of thing? I mean, do you sometimes have to ask the writer, what are you trying to convey when you're putting art together, Dalian?
Yeah. I mean, I think like comics is a collaboration first and foremost. So anytime I'm not sure, I'm always there to ask, you know, like, what did you mean by this? Or what were you envisioning? Sometimes, and especially with extremely like complicated or very specific kinds of layouts or illustrations, I've been known to ask my writers to draw me a stick figure of what they're envisioning or something like that to give me a visual. But like, you know, the other side of this coin is that because it is such a collaborative experience, part of the fun sometimes is not knowing 100% what your partner is getting at and then just still trying to like come up with something interesting anyway that tells the story. Because at the end of the day, you know, even as somebody like I am a writer and an artist overall. And even as somebody who is a writer and an artist, sometimes you don't know how something is going to look on the page until it's on the page. So it's very much like I think I said this before, the whole thing is a very intuitive process.
Well, that's good to know. Do you consider yourself more of a storyteller, Dalian? Because I always ask people if they're writer/artists, which they prefer. And they'll tell me often, they'll say, I'm just a storyteller. I don't prefer one or the other, but I enjoy them both.
Yeah. I would say that's true about myself as well. Part of the reason why I got into comics is because I am so passionate about both writing and art. And it felt like it felt like a really great way to combine the two of them.
Right. Well, it certainly shows. I mean, the artwork really sparkles, and I think the story is really compelling as well. The perfect marriage for me for a comic, and I think you guys have achieved this, is to have, I think you guys have made it so that I don't know where one stops and the other starts.
That's great.
I love that about this, because if something happens and it jars you out of the story, then you're in big trouble. But your stuff, it just pulled me right through. I particularly like the picture of the girl when she starts to have the fantasy or the dream. The eyes, the way the eyes are drawn really just got me, because she seems really startled by it. And I really enjoyed that. I thought that was nicely done as pulling us into the story and stuff. And there, we get to see other dream sequences too. The one time I do have to ask about was, there's one of the persons is doing it. He's upside down, which I thought was an interesting portrayal of that. He's the teacher at one point, he's flying an airplane, he's an astronaut, stuff like that, but he's upside down. Was that done for a reason, Dalian?
So in this case, that was actually one of the pages that Harry did first. So I was, in the interest of A, not wasting any of their gorgeous work, and B, also making it easier for the letterer to, you know, transfer over all of the words onto the new pages, I stuck pretty closely by their vision. But I think that, like, just compositionally, it makes a lot of sense to have them be upside down, because it really is about, it's not about them in that moment. It's about all of the things that they're seeing. And so it really is sort of like it's kind of your first hint that the things that they see might actually be parallel universes, separate places, you know, sort of like if you think about like how the parallel universe in Stranger Things, for example, is literally called the Upside Down.
Yeah.
You know, like taking the main subject of the page, the dreamer, and, you know, sort of like offsetting them in an unexpected way does sort of open you up to be looking at all of these other things as literally and metaphorically as different angles that you could be looking at.
See, I took from it that his world got flipped upside down.
Sure, it's an about
interpretation.
Because that was kind of interesting to me when that happened, because I was, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything about it. I want people to get to enjoy it the way that I did. And it's just a wonderful bit of artwork and a wonderful bit of inspiration to show things in ways that I don't expect. And that makes me think about it, which I like. So I really enjoyed that. There's another section that I really like where the main character is going downstairs. And it's a long set of stairs, which is interesting. And yet I'm so desperate to know what she's going to find when she gets to the bottom of the stairs. When we get there, I'm really intrigued as to what's there. And again, I'm not going to spoil it because there's some really interesting things going on. And I'm just fascinated by all the things. And the Brittany, the stuff, the story that you're telling as far as the script goes, and Dale, and how you're interpreting it. It's really an interesting bit of storytelling, and it really just grabbed me. I could not put it down. In fact, when I got to the end, I was like, oh no, that's not the end.
You wanted more?
That's right. I needed to know what's going to happen next. I said, we've got to know what's going to happen next. I can't just stop it right there. So I want to warn people, when you get to the end, you are going to want more. I can guarantee it, because it's just really well. It's such a great and gripping storytelling. And I am always, and I always say this on this podcast, some people get on me about it, but I am always also interested in female lead characters, because I understand men characters. I've been reading male lead characters for decades, and I have seen everything in the world, from scoundrels to superheroes to you name it. It's a guy. I pretty much have figured out what's going to happen. When it's a woman, on the other hand, I haven't seen that for a long time. So for me, I'm always so much more gripped by a female lead. And this is the case with her. I'm like, what is going to happen next to her? I don't know. And I love not knowing. So it's so well told, and it's got me gripped, and I can't wait to see it. It's just so well done.
I'm glad we could keep you guessing.
Yeah.
Because I'm an experienced reader, and if I can, you know, if I'm guessing and I'm pulled into the story, you know, that Frank Miller once said that when he read his first Batman comic, he opened it up and he fell in. And that was kind of my experience with this book. I was lost in the book, and when I got to the end, I thought, that can't be the end. There's more to this story. I've got to know. So that's how you guys have done a wonderful job of making me forget where I am and dropping into the comic book, which was really great.
Thank you.
That's excellent.
Really beautiful stuff. So speaking of which, okay, this is issue one. Obviously, I guess you've got issue one complete and ready to go.
Correct.
Okay, so what we need now is we need to, once this one gets done, you're going to, have you already started work on issue two?
The script is written, yes, and edited. It'll be what it'll be. Dalen's going to continue on colors.
Yes.
And then I'll have to find another inker, and probably maybe, I don't want to commit to anything, but maybe run another crowdfunding campaign to fund it, but we'll see.
Okay. How about you, Dan? Are you looking forward to issue two?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know a little bit more about this story and the plan and the world than the average reader does. But even I don't know everything yet. So, like, I'm definitely excited to see where it goes and excited to play a part in it as well. Sad that I can't stay on as the full artist for all of the pages, but unfortunately, it's just a little bit too hard on me physically. Mm. But I'm really, really happy that I get to stay on as the colorist and continue to help, you know, sell this story in a way that only colors can, because mm-hmm. colors contribute so much to the mood and the emotions of a book. And, you know, I heard a friend say once that, good colors are sort of like a good soundtrack to a movie.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Which, yeah, I always thought was so great. You know, it's like you, good colors, or I mean, in this case, like, you know, good values too, if you're doing a black and white comic, like that kind of stuff adds so much punch and so much emotion into a book. And I'm really looking forward to getting the chance to, you know, continue to carry that along in that way, because I think that I have a lot of story to tell just from color alone.
Cool. Very cool. Cause I, as I said, I edit, and I have my roommate created a comic, and he had a break between issue 11 and issue 12. And so he is now, we're in the middle of writing the 12th and final issue. So he's having to wrap a whole bunch of stuff together, and he has not told me the whole story.
Oh gosh.
So what I'm doing is, as I read the script, I am finding out more, and he's literally in the 12th issue revealing a lot of stuff. And I keep going to him, I did not expect that. And one character, let's just say, we find out there's a particularly sad thing going on. And I went to him and I said, I feel so sad for this character. And he says, well, yeah, but you know, there were evil things going on too. I said, yeah, but I'm still sad. I could give him some kind of reaction, which I think is helpful to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really like that and stuff. Brittany, do you do that? I mean, how much of the story, like, did you tell Dalen before she started to work on it?
Oh, I think I gave Dalen like a sort of pitch, you know, document, and in a script, I had character descriptions and sort of different world descriptions as well, along with the script. And then I think later I gave you the second script just to see.
I think so. It's been a bit, so I'm rusty on it. I know more than most people know, yeah. But I don't know if my knowledge is complete.
It's kind of fun. I prefer not to know. One time he gave me something, he was writing a thing and he wanted it to be really funny. And I got to the end of the page and I said, that's not funny enough. And he went back and rewrote it and made it funnier. And I said, that was a serious step up from where it was before. So I like to be able to provide, you know, input that helps the things get accomplished the way that he wants it.
Absolutely.
So it's just great. It's just, there's nothing better than the collaborative process, I think. Some people, certain folks I know who write, what they write is gold dripping off their pen. And there are no changes allowed, kind of like Star Trek. Star Trek's that way. If you, they send the script, the actors must follow that exactly. There are no changes. And I always kind of think that gets rid of a lot of the creativity when you do that kind of stuff. But it's a comic too, so that's the good news about it. So, Brittany, obviously you've gotten two scripts written. Any more scripts out of the five that you have put together?
Yeah, four of the five are written.
Do you know where it's going to end?
I do. I have the fifth one outlined. Okay. I haven't sat down and written it. I don't think I've been focused on this campaign.
Do you find sometimes that the ends and the characters change once you get into the script, start writing it?
You know, I think they change more when the art process started with issue one. That's mm-hmm. when I noticed them changing once I saw the character designs and once I saw them on the page, you know, in the environments that Harry and Dalen created. I felt like I was more inspired by those interpretations and depictions, mm-hmm. and they became more real. Mm-hmm. And so I think it became like easier to write them in a way.
They took on a life of their own.
Yeah, and definitely. Yeah, and I think that I got to know them more through that, the visual aspect.
So interesting. It's really, really interesting because the creative process I'm always fascinated by, and how people tell stories, I'm always kind of intrigued as to how it happens. Sometimes, because the book that I've been helping with, when we started to see the art, it changed some of the characters in the creator's minds, because then he started to say, wait a second, I see something different in the artwork that makes that character a little different than what I originally conceived. Not bad, but in some ways a little better, a little different. Mm-hmm. And you like that.
Yeah. Art's very inspiring.
Yeah, it's, you just never know until you actually see it on the page sometimes.
Absolutely.
What it's going to be. So it's great fun. Just, you guys are doing a wonderful job. Again, it's Dead Dreams. And the second part, Lucid Chronicles, number one. If you go to zoop.gg/C/DeadDreams, all one word, you'll get there and you'll find it. Be sure to get there after you get done listening to this interview and support Brittany and Dalen, and make sure we get more of this, because I got to know what happens next.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.